This week, we're talking about stars and the relationship to Freemasonry. Is there inherent philosophy of stars? Did the existence of a starry-decked canopy assist in the evolution of the human mind? Then, we'll talk all about Brother Benjamin Franklin and how he fought counterfeiters in colonial America. Brother Franklin was pretty groundbreaking in this area, plus a quick rundown of MasonicCon Chicago. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 611. In the news, well, we're heading down to Grand Lodge this week. It's going to be a wonderful time as usual. I can already guarantee that. I know it's going to be a great sessions. Looking forward to it. We've got a new Grand Master coming in this year, so that's pretty exciting. Looking forward to his remarks. But that's here in Illinois, so this not everywhere in the world is getting new Masters or anything. But it's just here in Illinois. That is definitely what's happening in this upcoming weekend. I'll be traveling down there with Right Worshipful Brother Spencer Hammond. He was a keynote speaker at our MasonicCon Chicago event, which went really well. I promised a quick, light overview of the day, and I'll give you that right now. MasonicCon Chicago, the weather was amazing. We didn't have to wear masks. People shook hands. We had a full house. We had a great number of vendors, including the Silas Shepherd Lodge of Research, who was there selling their books, as well as Brother Evan Horn of Three Knox Apparel was there. He's a newer company creating all new and original designs. He created a MasonicCon Chicago t-shirt, which was really awesome. He's got all the sizes up on the website, threeknoxapparel.com. So a little plug for that. So on preview night, we had Brother Stephen L. Harrison and Brother James Buckhorn come out. James gave an illuminating presentation, which really called us to question all the things that we hear in Lodge given to us as histories or by our mentors. It was really great. Then we had another presentation by Stephen L. Harrison, who gave us an incredible look at Frank S. Land. I had no idea about this incredible story of this guy who essentially went from rags, I say rags to riches, but he never really was rich. He was doing okay. And he was rich in terms of his relationships and his life, and he was a real influencer. We found out that he was really good friends with Harry S. Truman, maybe best friends. It was really awesome. The next morning, we had Chad Kopensky come on, and he gave a wonderful talk about this super rare Masonic book, John Shearer's kind of illustrations on each degrees, and there are only a certain number of these that are known to exist, and one was just kind of sitting in a lodge at Chad Kopensky's lodge, to be exact, and they didn't know anything about it. And since finding out, now it is the pride and joy of the district and of the lodge. It's really cool, and they use it. Brother Robert Marshall gave a great presentation on the Masonic influences on the horror genre in films. This was pretty incredible. I highly enjoyed it, and I'm really looking forward to catching it one more time when I watch the video of it, once we get those up. Spencer Hammond gave an illuminating presentation on this concept of divine inspiration, of working with your hands and bringing something extraordinary out of the ordinary. Brother James Fry came on and he did a presentation on the Swedenborgian Rite, which pretty much blew us away, especially when he said who wrote the rituals. And it really wasn't Swedenborg, so there's that. Mike Jarzebeck gave a crazy, amazing presentation on H.P. Lovecraft and his connections to Freemasonry. And it's not the typical connections you might assume, but he weaved a wonderful story, and he kept me captivated the whole time. And of course, Brother Darren A. Laners over at the Midnight Freemasons and the Meat Act Part podcast gave a presentation that I think was kind of a wake-up call, a slap in the face, if you will, for everybody to sort of wake up and realize some of the really mystic traditions within Freemasonry. We want to thank our local DMLA chapter and Rainbow for coming out, as well as Spencer Hammond had a great table set up. And of course, those of you who hung out with me and my wife and our friends in the Skull and Crown Lounge. The big question is, will we do a 2024? I think the answer is yes. I don't know much about it yet, but it all depends on our sponsor. And that is, of course, Space Novum Lodge 1183, which is a lodge that I assisted in chartering. So we're finalizing our numbers this coming week, and we'll see if we were in the red, in the black, or even. And hopefully we are in the black. But if we're in the red, I guess it's not too bad. This week I have two articles for you. The first up, as you heard in the opener, gives us a little bit about this idea of astronomy. We talk a lot about astronomy within the Masonic Lodge. In fact, there's a lot of, I don't want to call it pseudoscience, but there's a lot of pseudo-Masonic history that revolves around additional symbolism that could be ascribed to the various officer chairs and whatnot. Now, I'm not saying that's not true, and I'm not saying it is true, but it's something to think about. Obviously, there's a lot to think about in terms of the correlations between the heavenly bodies and various things within Freemasonry, even in a stated meeting. So, a piece that was recently published that went out in the Masonic Philosophical Society newsletter was an article called Stars in Freemasonry, Why We Should Always Look Up, by Pamela McDowell. Quote, remember to look up at the stars and not down at your feet. Try to make sense of what you see and wonder about what makes the universe exist. Be curious. Stephen Hawking. For countless generations, humanity has gazed upon the heavenly abyss with awe. Looking up at the night sky gives us a glimpse of the universe beyond our terrestrial concerns. In Freemasonry, some of the most sublime moments in our rituals occur when we are asked to look up. The whole lodge space is symbolically placed under a celestial canopy. Why? Perhaps one reason is that when we look up, we are led to the handiwork of the great architect. We realize how a faraway star can somehow connect us to the one who made it. Let us explore, then, the relationship between Freemasonry and the stars. The philosophy of stars. Quote, know that the philosopher has power over the stars and not the stars over him. End quote. Paracelsus, or Paracelsus. In ancient times, philosophers approached the relationship between stars and humans from different perspectives, but all recognized a certain connection or influence between the celestial and terrestrial realms. 1. Plato, the ancient Greek philosopher, believed in a cosmic harmony, and the celestial bodies exerted an influence on earthly affairs, shaping human destinies and reflecting the order and beauty of the cosmos. 2. Plotinus, a philosopher of the 3rd century CE, viewed the stars as emanations from the One, the ultimate divine source. He believed that the stars, as celestial beings, possessed a higher level of being and intelligence than humans. However, he also emphasized that the human soul had the potential to transcend its earthly limitations and reunite with the divine through contemplation and philosophical ascent. 3. Hermes Trismegistus taught that the stars were infused with divine energies and intelligence, and they transmitted spiritual knowledge and influences to humanity. The stars were seen as intermediaries between the divine and the earthly realms. Of course, these early thinkers did make a few mistakes. For instance, Ptolemy, an astronomer during the 2nd century BC, ended his world in the middle of China because his perception of the Mediterranean was off by about 30%. All in all, he's forgiven for his mistakes because his observations of the celestial heavens were remarkably recorded, only with the naked eye. What Masonic symbols might correlate with some of the ancient philosophical ideas? The blazing star in the Masonic Lodge. Those who have had the good fortune to have actually seen the inside of a Masonic Lodge will know with what prominence the blazing star is displayed. It presents itself soon after a brother first enters the lodge and begins participating in the rituals and degree work. On the John Harris First Degree Tracing Board in the Masonic Lodge, it is illustrated as a 7-pointed star with the sun and moon and stars displayed around it. While each of the luminaries have significant meanings, the blazing star outshines them all, as the apex of a brother's journey up Jacob's ladder. The sun and moon and stars are the lesser lights, or subordinate luminaries, through which the supernal light of the blazing star is mediated. It is taught that the blazing star is a symbol of deity, of omnipresence. The Creator is present everywhere. Omniscience, the Creator sees and knows all. And omnipotence, the Creator is all-powerful. Masonic scholar Brother Albert Mackey wrote that the blazing star appears differently in several of the Scottish Rite degrees, symbolizing the guiding light of the divine, which points the way of veritas, or truth. For example, in the third degree, it is first seen as a glimmering ray, but then breaks forth in full splendor as, quote-unquote, that bright morning star whose rising brings peace and salvation to the faithful and obedient, end quote. The lesson is that as the Freemason perfects himself by pursuing truth, he becomes like a blazing star, shining brightly in the midst of darkness. Along his journey, he always receives the guidance of a star before becoming a light in the world himself. The quest for, quote-unquote, that which is lost is not only a journey outward to seek divinity beyond the horizon, it is a journey inward to let light illumine the heart. One of the most intriguing theories of the blazing star is found in Albert Pike's Morals and Dogma, where he writes, quote-unquote, Sirius still glitters in our lodges as the blazing star. The star, Sirius, and Anubis. The blazing star is one of the three key ornaments in a Masonic lodge, along with the mosaic pavement and indented border, or tessellated border. According to Brother Pike, it originally identified with not only Sirius, but the Egyptian jackal-headed god Anubis, guardian and guide of the souls. He said, quote-unquote, the blazing star in our lodge represents Sirius, Anubis, or Mercury, guardian and guide of souls. Anubis was the Egyptian god of the underworld, who was the guide of the deceased in the afterlife state. He had the head of a jackal with pointed ears and a snout with strong indication that he is actually a dog. He was charged with assisting Horus with tending the scales upon which were weighed the hearts of the dead, making sure that the weighing was fair. In this symbolism, the scales are suggested to be the scales of karma. Figures such as Anubis, Thoth, Hermes, and Mercury all stand for and symbolize superior knowledge and the tools that humanity will need to build its spiritual temple. It was thought that proper use of these tools, making further progress in the arts and sciences, would lift mankind closer to the status of the gods. In the simplest of terms, it can be said that the Egyptians linked the nature of Sirius and Anubis with key esoteric doctrines. 1. The reality of the soul in its recurrent incarnations. 2. The centrality of karma as a determining factor in the life of the inner man. And 3. The relevance of celestial influence to the evolution of human consciousness. Brother Pike professes that all the mystery teachings and traditions of classical antiquity show telling signs of the origin in the Egyptian initiatory tradition and Sirius. In fact, H.P. Blavatsky, in her secret doctrine, calls Sirius, quote, the great instructor of mankind. If Sirius is indeed the blazing star in our lodges, such a genesis would endow the inner spiritual kernel of Freemasonry with the mark of sanctification. In closing, exploring the stars and the lodge's celestial canopy adds further insight into where a Freemason comes from and where he is going. It seems to reveal a message that there exists a perennial philosophy moving through a vast lineage of initiates. These teachings ever bear witness to the presence of a wisdom tradition, holding firm at the core of evolution on this planet. Although we may not be able to ever know through our human minds where Freemasonry's true celestial home is, it is worth searching for. And on the journey, we must remember to look up. Well, there we have this awesome piece by Pamela McDown, and really a wonderful overview of a lot of these concepts. I think I would only take issue with the mention of Hermes Trismegistus, taught that the stars were infused with divine energies and intelligence, and so on, only in that we do have some evidence of course, the Plato and Plotinus, but really Hermes Trismegistus is a sort of amalgamation of different people, and in some cases is thought to be Thoth Hermes himself, or Thoth, Mercury, Hermes, like all of these people brought together. And in one tradition, it even asserts that Moses is part of this divine trilogy of individuals. But I think the one thing I really like is this idea of the relevance of celestial influence to the evolution of human consciousness. I think constantly about how the human mind has evolved over millions of years. That for millions of years, the human has looked up at the stars and in interesting ways has been inspired to either create stories and be absolutely fine with these explanations, or to dig deeper and create instruments of observation that would make things even more clear. Now, in the past, I've read articles spanning the gamut. It's not always Masonic, but things related to the seven liberal arts and sciences. And we've talked about astronomy and astrology and all of these kinds of things in the past. And I wanted to read a complimentary piece to this from one of my favorite websites, sciencenews.org. But as I got over to it, another article caught my attention, and I thought, hey, this is kind of cool, because it's about a Mason. So let's hear how Benjamin Franklin fought money counterfeiters. Blue threads and muscovite, a reflective mineral, were incorporated into paper bills. This is a piece that was written in July 17th, 2023, and was posted by Joshua Rapp Learn. And I'll post a full link to this article in the show notes. But here we go. Though perhaps better known for its newspapers and almanacs, Benjamin Franklin's printing business also churned out paper money to support the colonial economy. Now, scientists are confirming some of the ways that Franklin and his associates thwarted counterfeiters to help early American paper currency succeed, including by adding a reflective mineral to bills. Franklin's bills, quote, served as an archetype for printed money, end quote, to come, says Kokator Manukian, a physical chemist at the University of Notre Dame in Indiana. Quote, unquote, it was very sophisticated for that time. In past studies, Manukian and his colleagues have analyzed ancient Roman coins, medieval manuscripts, and other artifacts using nuclear imaging techniques. When the researchers realized that Notre Dame housed paper money bills dating to the early colonial days of North America, the team decided to take a closer look, and they examined about 600 paper notes. By using techniques such as infrared, electron energy law spectroscopy, and X-ray analysis, the researchers could see features such as colored threads and muscovite, a crystallized mineral incorporated into the paper. The blue threads are visible to the naked eye, and the muscovite produces a glimmer that reflects light, features most knockoffs wouldn't have been able to reproduce, the team reports July 17th in the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The muscovite found in about 95% of the analyzed Franklin bills produced after 1754 was probably sourced from the same geologic area, the team says. The mineral was also probably used to increase the durability of the notes so that they could hold up better during circulation. It's wonderful that scientists are using these techniques to analyze the bills, says Jessica Linker, a historian at Northwestern University in Boston, who studies early money-making. Still, she says, historians have known for some time from historical documents that muscovite, also known as mica and blue threads, were incorporated into old paper money to fight counterfeiting. What's more, while Franklin contracted with the colonial governments to print money, others were involved in the decisions about its manufacture, not just Franklin, she says. The new analysis also showed that Franklin's operations used graphite in their black ink. Other money printers of the same time, including Paul Revere, generally used a type of black ink that had higher proportions of chemicals that came from burnt bones like phosphorus and calcium. Counterfeiters had figured out how to fake the bone black ink, and some knockoff Franklin notes are distinguishable by the fact that they use this bone black rather than graphite. Franklin's operations may have used graphite to one-up the counterfeiters, the researchers say, but Franklin wasn't the first printer to use the graphite ink. Black lead, the historical term for graphite, is listed in some 18th century ink recipes, she says. Quote, even if it was unique to the money or new in the mid-Atlantic, it's possibly not a Franklin innovation, but something he read about, experimented with, and used to improve the quality of the ink generally, she says. Not necessarily something to fight counterfeiting. Still, the discovery of the graphite in Franklin's notes is intriguing, she says. I don't think historians of colonial American printing would expect it to be there, end quote, mostly because the graphite was relatively scarce in the colonies at that time. Linker wonders whether this ink was used more broadly in Franklin's other imprints or used exclusively for paper money. Efforts to thwart counterfeiters of early American money were eventually upended by the British, who figured out some of the techniques when they flooded their upstart colony with fake bills as a destabilizing tactic during the American Revolution. The value of American money tanked, and in the years following the Revolution, the United States typically favored coins, only issuing treasury notes during the later wars. Even so, some of Franklin's techniques would go on to form the basis of increasingly sophisticated methods used to combat savvier forgers, Mnookin says. Quote, the techniques utilized in producing pre-Federal American currency were refined and enhanced during the 19th century. Whenever new bills were printed, he says, for that time, Franklin's paper money was really groundbreaking. Again, this came from ScienceNews.com, an independent journalism since 1921. If you dig this kind of stuff, please head on over to ScienceNews.org. You can support them and subscribe to full digital access to everything that they do. It's a great website. Check it out. We'll put links in the show notes. That's it for this week. I want to thank you all for coming with us on this edifying journey. Thanks to our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast. Without you guys, we cannot do this. And if you're wondering out there, you're sitting there listening week after week and you think, gee whiz, how can I assist? Well, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on support the show, and you can sign up to be a fellow producer, contributor, or legacy partner. Or you could just toss us anything you want, really. It all goes back into the production of this show. The more we are able to raise, obviously, the more we can give back and put it all into this crazy thing that we all like so much, Masonic education. I want to thank you all for even considering. But that's it for this week. So until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.
Next, the is not.